I call this meeting of House Finance to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:34 p.m. on Thursday, March 2nd, 2023. With us today at the table, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Staff, Representative Colomb, Representative Ortiz, Representative Pronk, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. Assisting us today as the LAO moderators, Emma Turner, and we have Bree Wiley as our finance secretary. On today's agenda, we will be hearing a budget overview from the Department of Fish and Game, and we will be hearing that presentation from the Commissioner Douglas Vincent Lang and Melissa Hill, Acting Administrative Services Director. Commissioner Vincent Lang, would you please put yourself on the record and start your presentation?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to come speak with you. I actually really enjoy these finance hearings. It's a good opportunity to have me highlight the department and what we've accomplished and what we're looking to accomplish in the next year. So thank you. Okay. So just for those of you who may not be familiar with us, I'm outlined in this slide our constitutional, statutory, and what we've taken out of those two to be our mission statement. Unlike many other states in the nation, we actually have a foundation or state constitution, which is kind of unique, and that basically a sustained yield management principle that basically talks about beneficial uses. And again, that's unique across our nation in terms of having a foundation like that for a department. From that, we have the Alaska statutes that define the department, establish the Department of Fish and Game and the functions of the commissioner, which are to manage, protect, maintain, improve, and extend the fish and game and aquatic plant resources of the state in the interest of the economy and general well-being of the state. And then from that, we have a mission statement, which basically takes all of those two above and basically says that we're supposed to protect, maintain, and improve the fish, game, and aquatic plant resources of the state, and manage their uses and development in the best interest of the economy and the well-being of the people of the state, consistent with the sustained yield principle. Those are lofty goals. They have a lot of different pieces of it in there, which is best interest of the economy, the well-being of the people of the state of Alaska, and sustained yield. And those balancing acts are tough things to do. Next slide. The core services in the department are three. We basically provide a management program, which basically provides hunting, fishing, and trapping opportunities. We protect our state right to manage our fish and game resources, and we conserve and improve habitat and access across the state. So,
if you would, I mean, we just really enjoy hearing you give your own thoughts. If you don't want to read the slide to us, we would love to hear what you have to say and add to it.
Okay. Then we have stock assessment and research, which basically is our research program that informs our management program across the state. And then we also have customer service and public involvement. And that involves getting people out, getting people, telling them how they can hunt and fish, what the regulatory oversight or requirements are to hunt and fish in our state. But it also includes our entire board of fish and regulatory processes. And Alaska's got, a fairly unique position or a unique system for fish and game management compared to the rest of the United States. We actually have a board of fish and a board of game that's oversees how we allocate our resources, and it has 70-some advisory committees across the state of Alaska that inform the board in their insights as to how the fish and game should be managed. Any member of the public can provide a proposal to those boards to provide them consideration as to how they would like to see that managed. And then we also have a licensing and permitting structure for our Title 16 permitting.
We have a question from Representative Ortiz, and then followed by Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Commissioner, in the spirit of the Chair stating that we'd like to hear what you think about these things rather than just, you know, read through the different slides, if you can go back to number two, page two, the previous page, under the Alaska statutes, the second one down, Title 16 says manage, protect, maintain, and improve and extend fishing game and aquatic plant resources of the state in the interest of the economy and general well-being of the state. in since your tenure, do you, those first four or five words, are they prioritized? Are you, do you feel like you have the direction to protect above all, or do you have the direction to, is there any priority in those words there?
In my eyes, there's no priority. The legislature did not define prioritization of those different statements in there, so they're all a balancing act that occurs between me and the Alaska Board of Fish and Board of Game moving forward in the legislature and the people of Alaska.
Okay. And then when you get into the statement about in the interest of the economy, is that in the context of fisheries, or do you have to extend that in the interest of the economy to other areas of the economy versus just fisheries?
I think there was a recognition in the words interest of the economy and general well-being of the state. And so let me give you an example. We could probably get the highest value for bear hunting by offering guided bear hunts in the municipality of Anchorage. But that's probably not in the best interest of the municipality of Anchorage. Probably public safety is a higher value in municipality of Anchorage. So I think we consider those two statements in context of the situation that we're facing. And when we talk to the regulatory board, in this case, the Board of Game, and make a decision as to whether we're going to maximize the economy of the state or whether we're going to maximize the general well-being of the state. And another example is with subsistence. There are often times when subsistence uses may not be the highest and best interest of the economic use of that resource, but it's definitely in terms of the cultural well-being of the area.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. And we have a question from Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I was hoping if you would clarify, because this is relatively new material for me. I noticed that in the Constitution, there's reference to fish, forests, wildlife, grasslands. And then in the statute, it does mention aquatic plant resources. And I'm thinking about kelp and other mariculture, things like that. Is that what you put into or fold into fisheries, or how does that get defined, if you don't mind helping with that?
So the natural resources section pertains to all natural resources, not just fish, game, and aquatic plant resources. So that tells DNR and the Fish and Game Commissioner that we're supposed to manage everything in the state of Alaska that's a natural resource for sustained yield. When you get down to the statutes, the legislature has granted me specific ability to deal with fish, game, and aquatic plant resources of the state. Clearly, mariculture is an aquatic plant resources, so it's under our interest.
Thank you. So I understand. So that's become a newer area and something that certainly seems to be growing quite a bit. I just wanted to highlight that is then under your umbrella. Thank you so much.
Well, through the chair. So it's under my umbrella, but it's also under DNR's umbrella because DNR decides the permit to authorize a land use, or in this case, a water use for doing that. But clearly, in terms of advocating for mariculture in the best interest of the economy, is something we're doing actively.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is just for your awareness. This is my leadership team. I have two deputy commissioners, Ben Mulligan. He kind of serves as the Secretary of Interior, per se. He deals mostly with things within our state jurisdiction within out to 3 miles. So he's dealing with the Board of Fish, Board of Game when I'm not there. He deals with the Federal Subsistence Board issues. He also operationally serves as the director for the Division of Habitat, which is now a section of Habitat. Rachel Baker is my deputy on kind of the Secretary of State outside 3 miles. So she sits in the council, North Pacific Fishery Management Council for me. She deals with the International Pacific Halibut Commission, a lot of the treaty issues associated with it. She also kind of oversees our involvement in North Pacific and Anadarko Fish Commission. So all those things that are kind of extraterritorial from the state fisheries. Melissa is my acting administrative services director. Joe Feigl, who's behind us, is our legislative liaison. Rick Green serves as a special assistant dealing with communications. And then I have three main divisions in the department. One is Director of Commercial Fisheries, and Sam Raybong is my Director of Commercial Fisheries. Tom Talby is the Acting Director of the Division of Sport Fish, and Eddie Grasser is the Director of Wildlife Conservation. And then we have two directors for our Board of Game, Board of Fish, so they serve as executive directors for that. And then we have two sections that used to be divisions in the department. One was the Habitat Division, second was the Subsistence Division. In the first year when I became commissioner, I was asked to take some budget cuts, and rather than fill vacant director positions, I decided to keep that money operational within those two units, and we kept them. We designated them as sections. So the Habitat section is overseen by the Deputy Commissioner Mulligan, and I'm overseeing the director roles for the division, so for the subsistence section.
Sorry. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Commissioner, could you just give me a little bit of the professional background for both Deputy Commissioner Mulligan, Deputy Commissioner Baker, and Acting Director of Sport Fish, Tom Taub? And then one other question on Taub. Is that a position you can designate on here as acting, and I thought you had the authority to appoint, so I'm just curious if they came up through the ranks at ADF&G or where they came from.
So Deputy Commissioner Mulligan served with the department for about 10 years now. He was a technician early in the department. He then kind of served as a legislative liaison under what past commissioner. He's got a good understanding of fisheries. He didn't have as much of an understanding of the wildlife side, but he basically had about 10 years of experience within the department. So, and he's doing, in my eyes, an excellent job in navigating that interface between the Federal Subsistence Board and the Department of Fish and Games as it navigates the jurisdictional issues we're facing. Deputy Commissioner Baker had worked in the state, and then she went to NOAA. So a pretty good experience in how NOAA administers the EEZ water fisheries. And I was lucky enough to have her accept a job with us to take over the council seat and the role in trying to navigate, again, how we manage our fisheries and our state interests compared to the federal government's interest in doing that. You're right. I do have the appointment ability to appoint directors. Tom Talby was the deputy director. He is currently the deputy director, but he's acting as the sport fish director. He has almost 30 years of experience in the division of sport fish. I have chosen to not appoint a director until probably the end of the board cycle. I didn't think it was fair to an individual to not be involved in the proposal development and board preparation, throw him into the middle of a board meeting without having that background. So Tom has willingly stepped up to fill that role, and he's put his name in for it, so we'll make a decision after the board cycle's done to a permanent replacement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, the one thing that probably concerns me the most on this list is subsistence research that we don't actually have. I mean, I know you do that. We don't actually have designated people. Subsistence is, and I'm not just saying my district, but it's an important part across the state, and I think it needs to be elevated a little bit higher. So, yes, I know that costs more money, but I think I could probably get pretty much in agreement that is a high priority for Alaskans.
Yeah, through the chair. So I want to make it clear that subsistence has representation at every Board of Game and Board of Fish meeting, irrespective of whether or not there is a director appointed to the position. Both I, as the commissioner, have for the live role, and the deputy operations manager is at every one of those meetings. So nothing is happening from a regulatory point of view in terms of informing the board's decisions on subsistence because there's not a director there. But if you have a director, it elevates it. I would just hate to see the time when we're asked to forego $200,000 of money to hire a director at the expense of collecting subsistence information to inform board decisions. That would, in my eyes, be a mistake. So, that section is defined in statute as a section, and its primary purpose is to collect information to inform board discussions on amounts necessary for subsistence and customary and traditional practices. And that is still occurring.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair. Along the same lines of questioning regarding those two director roles that were removed during the time when we were having some budget struggles there, they were not when you talk about total spend for the government, they were not actually. Wasn't it true that those positions went to the governor's office? So, and ultimately, you might have saved the department money, but the state necessarily didn't save money. Am I correct on that?
I know that I can't remember where the positions went to after they left the department. I know that I was asked to come up with X amount of budget reduction in both of those programs, and it was my decision to forego not hiring those positions and then have to cut the operations of those two divisions at that time operationally to pay for it. So they were vacant at the time after they I'll have to check as to where they went after they were vacated. But again, I did not see the value. I saw more value in keeping perimeters out in the field for Title 16 and more value in collecting subsistence research than filling those two vacant positions.
And I'm, you know, not doubting that was, you know, a good decision. I'm just wondering, you know, the essence was we were saving the state money, and I'm not sure that that's actually the case. But let's follow up on the same line of questioning as Rep. Prong. You know, with the changing situations out there in the ocean, you spoke about that at the early hearing that I was a part of today in fisheries. Is habitat something that we need to start paying more attention to? I mean, I know habitat generally refers to perhaps land issues more than water issues, but maybe not. Maybe habitat, that person who was there at one time had something to do with water as well as land. I don't know. But I do know that obviously from our discussion earlier today, things are happening out there in the ocean, and do we need to take a little closer look at putting resources towards investing and try and find out what's going on in the ocean?
Yeah, most of that research is being done by our science groups within the Division of Sport Fish and Division of Commercial Fisheries. The habitat section is primarily associated with the Title 16 permitting authority we have. So, again, that's a unique function that the Commissioner of Fish and Game has been given across the nation. I can't think of another state where a Fish and Game Commissioner can stop an activity in an anadromous waterway by refusing to issue a Title 16 permitting. That's an incredibly powerful tool that's vested with the Department of Fish, with the Commissioner of Fish and Game. So, again, the habitat section's primary responsibility is the issuance of those Title 16 permits and the Fish and Game Coordination Act. And again, it's a judgment call of the legislature whether you want to grant money to hire those positions. But I just would, when I was faced with that decision 4 years ago, I saw more value in ensuring that the Title 16 permits were going out the door and making those decisions, and in terms of subsistence research, conducting the surveys that informed it, than being at the head of a relatively small section of the department.
Thank you.
I think we need to move on. We'll do it on the next slide, perhaps. We got to get we're a little behind the time.
So organizationally, we have seven different budget components. One is the sport fisheries budget component. And then we have two separate budget components that were defined last year by the legislature. One was a Fairbanks and Anchorage hatchery component, and a third one was the Southeast Hatchery. So those used to be subcomponents of the sport fish component. Now they're separate budget entities in our budget. We have a wildlife conservation, which has two subcomponents, the wildlife conservation and the hunting education public shooting ranges. There's a habitat component to our budget. There's assistance research and monitoring component, a commercial fisheries component, which includes several components basically based on regionalization and statewide services. And this Commercial Fishery Entry Commission is contained within that budget component, but they're really a separate entity that I think you'll hear from separately than from me. And then under statewide support services, the commissioner's office and maintenance, boards of fisheries, board of game is all included in that, as well as the EVOS trustee council, which is now vested in fishing game, because 2 years ago you had a choice to move that over to DEC, but you kept it in fishing game. Next slide. So, quick overview. We turn about a $240 million investment, of which about $65 million is general fund, into about $12.5 billion annually. That's a question I asked my staff when I first became commissioner. I said, is the investment the legislature is making in us worth it? And so I had them do this analysis, and I think it's a reasonable return on investment. We don't anticipate any reduction in services as a result of the proposed budget, but the budget does include new money for fisheries, wildlife, and resource projects. I think that's good. I think when I first started as commissioner, our budget was about $195 million. It's grown to about $240 million, much of that coming out of federal dollars. We largely kept our GF relatively stable. We're considering consolidating our various budget components in the Division of Commercial Fisheries into a single unit to improve efficiency. That's how our Division of Sport Fish and our Division of Wildlife Conservation is run. We think there's some value in having the Division of Commercial Fisheries be a single budget component. So here's the slide I think you've seen from every department. Right now, our governmented budget is about, is in the last slide here, $65 million in UGF, $13 million in designated general fund, $75 million in other, which is primarily the Fish and Game Fund, and then federal dollars is the largest component of our budget, which is $88 million. So our total budget request coming out is $242 million compared to FY22 actuals of $184 million. So I think the governor in his requested amended budget is sees the value of fish and game, and I think he's seeing the value of adding money into the department budget to address some of the issues we're facing across the state with fisheries and wildlife challenges. In terms of budget fund breakdown, again, most of our money is federal, and with about $65 million, a quarter of it is UGF. Of the other funding sources, again, the vast majority of that is Fish and Game Fund money, with other major funding sources being interagency receipts and capital improvement project receipts. Next budget. This is just a summary of it in a different form. I'm not going to read it off to you. Next slide. So let's take a look at the expenditures within the department. About our largest division is the Division of Commercial Fisheries. It's about $82 million. The next largest division is the Division of Wildlife Conservation at about $63 million. When I first started with the department, I think Division of Wildlife Conservation was in third place, but now it's grown to second place with the growth of PR funds. Division of Sport Fish is about $50 million. And the Division of Statewide Support Services, which basically helps all those other groups, is about $22 million. And Habitat and Subsistence Research are relatively small sections in the department. In terms of the position history, we've seen our position count, PCN count, go down. And I'll tell you, from my chair as commissioner, that's starting to show an effect. Our budget has grown by about $40 million, but our position count has gone down. And I'm starting to hear from my staff at least a little bit of stress associated with taking on more work at the existing PCN level. So I think you'll be hearing me come in future outlook years and asking for some additional PCN counts to, if we're going to accept new money, just to provide my staff with the right work-life balance that keeps them going, and recognizing that we can't keep putting more workload on them when they already have full-time jobs. Next slide.
Well, we can possibly pause for a moment if we have a question. No. I wasn't trying to get everyone to completely stop, but I wanted to get going on the presentation. So I do believe that Representative Galvin had a question. I know it was a ways back, and then Representative Kronk, or no? Okay. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Through the chair, Commissioner, I think I heard you say earlier that this is back with regard to leadership, and there were some questions around the subsistence piece and the subsistence voice, and you said you made sure that at every meeting there is a voice there that's not left out. And I just wanted to ask you specifically, in my mind, that means there's a specific role or somebody in a position of power who has that voice, who would be representing subsistence. Is that what is in place in terms of your boards? I'm sorry, I'm not real familiar, so I just thought I'd ask.
So I think it's important to realize that our staff don't advocate for user groups. So like our commercial fisheries director doesn't advocate for the Division of Commercial Fisheries at a board meeting. He's there to inform the board as to questions regarding how that division is managed. So at the board meeting, we have a position, a seat for me, because I'm actually a member of the board as a non-voting member. Mm-hmm. But then we have the Division of Commercial Fisheries, the Division of Sport Fisheries at the Board of Fish, and then we have the Deputy Operations Manager for the subsistence section. So if a question comes up regarding the impact of a proposal on subsistence uses, that person is there and answering questions to the board.
Follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
So I wasn't suggesting an advocate as much as a representative, somebody who would be able to give information. And that's and I guess that's the question at hand, is if there is a representative who has deep information with regard to subsistence directly or...
So usually the deputy operation manager has a seat at the front table, and then they're usually supported by the regional staff for the region at the board meeting.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Commissioner, I'm looking at the budgeted positions, and in particular drawn to the non-perm positions, which if we go back to the beginning of the 10 years back, we had 68, and we now have one. And I think of those as many of your seasonal or, you know, a research study for 2 years on subsistence consumption. And of course your overall PCN has gone down. So tell me what's happened to those jobs that used to be non-perms and we now only have one, but you know, they went away in 14, 13, 16 and
so
now there's one.
So through the chair, so I've been commissioner since FY 2019. A lot of those are positions that were basically rehire retirees that we've moved into those roles into more permanent positions so that we're not, no longer having what they call those double dippers that were coming back into the system. I don't know what caused the decline from 68 down to 14, but I'll check into it for you. Regarding the question on PCNs, we're looking at that right now. There's a question as to why do you need more PCNs when you have vacant PCNs. So we're looking at that question. We have some vacant PCNs and really hard to fill job classes, things like biometricians that have high educational requirements and the pay is not competitive on those ones. And some of the long, more stressful area management biologist jobs we're having a hard time recruiting because people don't want to work in those high-stress environments for the same pay that they can get working in a less-stress environment. So we're looking at how we can transfer the PCNs into the right places so that we are able to fulfill the needs of the department, especially using some of the vacant ones that are out there.
One final follow-up. Do you know how long it's been since you've done a job class study of your management biologists, et cetera? Because, you know, it seems that many of them have very high-stress jobs with very high education requirements, yet they're paid at a level that people with far less responsibility in other agencies get paid as much as a regional biologist. And, you know, wondering if you've advocated for or done a pay class study to look at those to see how that relates to your recruitment and availability.
So I've become worried enough about morale in the department of right other things that we've actually hired a consulting firm to give us some advice on what we can do inside the department with the tools that we have to basically address some of the issues of workplace retention, recruitment retention. Of course, pay is a critical issue, but that's kind of occurring across the department, so I think that's being handled out of the governor's office. But we're looking at things like what we can do in terms of teleworking, what we can do in terms of having flexible work hours, just the things that we have under our control we're trying to address through this study. And I'm getting a report, I think, next week from that final group to give me what the ideas were that surfaced out of that kind of department-wide survey.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair. Good afternoon, Commissioner. On the subject of the habitat section, was that at one point a division?
At one point, that was a division, yes.
Follow up.
And what I know you've talked about this, and so I understand you're interested in cutting the chief of that section, I guess. But what is the public take, or what should we take from the fact that it was a division and is now a section?
So, again, just to reiterate, when I became commissioner, those were two vacant positions. Okay. So I was faced with the choice of hiring them at the expense of cutting the budget in other areas to fill those positions. So that was my decision to not fill those positions, recognizing that we were going to have reduced services because I wasn't going to get replacement money for that. I have not heard any significant issues regarding habitat to the extent that I've heard it regarding subsistence. But in subsistence, it's a question of, is there somebody representing our interests at the state table? I want to assure you all that the interests are being heard. It's just whether or not there's a director position for that subsistence section, which I think is about 23 or 24 people, whether we have a division or not, compared to what's in the Division of Commercial Fisheries and most of the other major divisions, which are in the hundreds of people.
I guess where I was going is I understand the decision you made, but our fiscal position has improved. It's sort of empirically so. It's still not ideal. And you've grown other UGF budgets. Is this just something that you think doesn't need the same separate focus, or is it something that Mr. Mulligan can just do in addition to his other duties?
I guess at the current time, if somebody were to give me $200,000 more, I think the more valuable thing that I could do in terms of my Title 16 authorities would be to put additional perimeters out in the field and have a position overseeing it.
Okay. Thank you.
So this is the operating change highlights. There's basically a request for $800,000 of UGF to support the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute watershed project. So several years ago, when UGF was very short, we cut $800,000 and we worked with the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute to take over some of our core research and management programs in that region. They every year balked at that. They've willingly done it to keep the fisheries open, but it really is a core responsibility of the department to do these activities. So this reinstates that $800,000 so that the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute can get back to what they're doing rather than fund core state activities. The second one is $285,000 for the AYK region. We had a talk about this earlier today. When I became commissioner, we were spending about $300,000 or $400,000 in the AYK region on salmon management. We've got that up to about $1.4 million, largely from non-UGF sources. We're trying to answer the questions on Chinook and chum salmon in that region. They're difficult questions to try to find answers to, but it's not for lack of trying. But this reinstates $285,000 that was originally in that program that we cut the extension of the pilot station, Eagle sonar operations, and we also cut a few other projects. So this gets that money restored, hopefully to be able to better answer the questions of what's happening in the Yukon and AYK region. The third one is removing, we alleviate the shortfall in the Bering Sea Aleutian Islands crab test fishery receipts. We're not having a crab fishery this year because of the crab collapse. That results in $1 million we're not accepting in terms of test fish receipts. This gives us $1 million to replace that so that we can continue conducting crab research while that fishery is closed. The second one is the fourth one is to consolidate the Division of Commercial Fisheries into regional components. We basically have separate budgets for each one of these regions, and we think it's more appropriate to manage that as a single component so we're not spending a lot of time just filling out transaction records, moving in between Bristol Bay and different areas. A lot of these activities benefit the overall commercial fisheries of the state, and we're just spending a lot of time just administratively moving money around these single components. So this would get us into a more functional administrative services section for that section.
We have a question from Representative Kronk.
Yeah, Madam Chair, through the chair. A quick question, you know, when we, the crabfish testers, you keep, quick, how does that work? Do you pay somebody to go out, catch crab, and they get to sell those crab to recover the costs?
That's correct. You got it right on the head.
Okay. Thank you. I just had to ask.
And Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Commissioner, your statewide fisheries management component, bottom bullet there, I think I'm correct. This was attempted last year. This body gave approval to that. The other body did not. I think that I'm correct in understanding, because the legislature's the appropriators. It was the Senate's position, and frankly, some of the positions of some of the people on the House side. Oops, I used Senate, sorry. In any case, when I see this sheet, it illustrates the issue, because I can clearly see from this what's going to happen in the Central Region Fisheries Management. This is a project going directly to that area. What's going to happen in the Western Region with the crab test fishery. And I remember when I was the sub-finance chair, that's really helpful to understand. Boom, this is going here, this is going there, this is going there. I can understand your idea about consolidation, but from an appropriator standpoint, because, you know, frankly, we don't know everything about a lot of this stuff, but it's very helpful to be able to say, okay, in this region they're going to do this, in this region they're going to do that, and I think that goes away if you do that consolidation process, and it makes our job harder. So that's just the position.
Yeah, so we're still project-based. So when you see the yellow book come out, rather than seeing them in the components, you'll still see them now as a Division of Coastal Fisheries. So we still do project-based budgeting, so we can still be held accountable at that project level. So it's your guys' decision, but we just are trying to administratively streamline the activities a little bit so that we're able to not spend a lot of time just AJing money between what really is a statewide service. Like, for instance, a boat might be in the southeast region, Homeport, but it's used in the south central region. So now we find ourselves moving money around between those regions to support a boat that's just because it's Homeport in one region. So, It's half dozen, one half.
Just more for the.
We can live with it if you don't do it. We're just suggesting this is a way to streamline administration.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And then. When the pandemic hit, COVID-19 pandemic hit, we really had a hit in the Division of Sport Fisheries for license sales. We didn't have visitors coming up, and when the visitors didn't come up, we lost about a lot of revenue out of it. We were worried about the Fish and Game Fund, so we reduced the expenditures in there by about $500,000. The Fish and Game Fund has recovered. We're to a point now where we have the ability to expend some of that Fish and Game Fund. And Dingell Johnson money's there, and we're afraid we're going to revert Dingell Johnson money if we don't have some additional authority. So this restores the authority to the Division of Sport Fish to post-pandemic levels or pre-pandemic levels, and gives us an ability to match PR Dingell Johnson fund money. And we'll basically restore the projects that we had cut. Good examples are we ended a lot of weir operations early, the Deschka weir. We ended the Little Sioux Weir early. We took cuts all across the state just to make our books balanced during that pandemic years. But this gets us back to where we were. And then the last one is we have a capital improvement project authority for $53,000. I think that's remind me here. Oh, this is the we had. Somehow it ended up in here. We had a Chinook salmon assessment program that was a $10 million investment back 10 years ago. There's $53,000 that we don't need that authority any longer. And not that we don't care about Chinook salmon, but it's kind of to a point where we just don't need that $53,000. So we're asking for that to be deleted out of our CIP request funds.
All right. Representative Hanner.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Commissioner, you're going to have to help me out because I'm working from memory without having looked it up, and I should have ahead of time. But for 4 years I've served, there's been some issues around a sport fish surcharge of $5 to help with hatchery reimbursement. We've never quite moved that bill to the finish line, but gotten it two-thirds of the way there. I've always understood it to be important for the ability of the hatcheries to continue to produce the sport fish options as opposed to the calm fish. Bill hasn't been introduced by the administration. Has the desire and need gone away, or that sport fish hatchery surcharge license fee?
So we had a unique way of paying for our hatcheries that we built, two state-of-the-art hatcheries, one in Anchorage, one in Fairbanks. We put together a surcharge to pay back bonds that there was no state general funds that went into the construction of those hatcheries. We were also able to find the match that we were able to throw Dingell Johnson at. So we basically built two hatcheries largely at the expense of non-resident anglers through surcharge fees. That surcharge went away when we paid the bonds off, which we promised everybody would. But now we're left with trying to repay the maintenance costs associated with these hatcheries. The hatcheries are state-of-the-art. They have recycling technology, recirculation technology. There's a lot of pumps and water qualities, and the need has not gone away. But we're facing the question of, do we face an uncertain future in this with the Senate, who didn't pass that bill through it? So I don't want to take a lot of time and effort to try to get a bill that is not going to successfully navigate through the Senate again. That said, we are in talks with the Senate to try to find out if we can find a pathway forward for that. One thing that happened last year, and I'll be short on this, is the Senate restructured our sport fish components to have a sport fish component that had two subcomponents in it, a hatchery one. They basically made those into two different components. And as a result, they created one that just has expenditures allowed for the Fairbanks and Anchorage hatchery, and one for Southeast hatcheries. When we repaid back the bonding for those hatcheries, we built up a lot of credit with the Fish and Wildlife Service that can be used to match, that we can use as match money to do maintenance in the hatcheries. When we built this new structure, we've left a lot of match on the table that we could use for maintenance. So we're working through the new structure. We don't have a solution yet identified as to what we think is the best solution to utilize that match, but we're just bringing it to your attention that the current structure really does hamstring our ability to use that accredited match that we have in the bank with the Fish and Wildlife Service to do maintenance.
I have a question on dilapidated hatchery in my district and the Clutna tail race. But I think that's been transferred maybe to Cook. Could you just tell me about how, you know, a hatchery was there for a while. Now it's not in operation, and kind of I don't really know the history of how the hatcheries that were in operation aren't so much anymore.
So when the part, there was a, used to be in the Department of Fish and Game a division called FRED, Fishery Rehabilitation Enhancement Division, and it basically built hatcheries across the state, including the Clutton, I think, was one of them. All of the ones are through Southeast Alaska. After we built those hatcheries, the legislature and the department decided to disband them, and they transferred many of those hatcheries over to PNPs, private nonprofit groups across the state. Now they're operating those hatcheries, but many of them, the ownership of the hatchery still remains with the state. So in this case, I think the Clutna hatchery is transferred over to Cook Inlet Aquaculture. So they're operating that at our facility, and they're determining how best to operate that under the cost recovery mechanisms that they have in place. But I'll get you better answers than that moving forward, because I wasn't involved in the FRED division when that was around. But I know that we maintain ownership of many of those PNP hatcheries, but they're operated by third parties now for the state under the PNP laws of the state.
If you would, I would appreciate that, and then find out if it's actually in operation, if they're doing anything with it, or if it's just shut down entirely. And so
I
and so
don't
forth.
Think they're operational right now, but I think they had been in the past, but that's a decision for Cook Inlet Aquaculture Board to decide whether they're going to operate it or not.
A status update would be Appreciate it. Okay, Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, and I know we've talked about this separation of hatcheries. Explain to me, since I'm new in finance, just what structurally changed so we're not taking advantage of those funds to use them?
Because they're separate components now. The fact that it's a separate budget unit makes it we only have the ability to use the money within that budget component for match. So if it becomes UGF that's given in that budget component, there's nothing to match. It just structurally becomes hard for us to gain access to it the way it's designed. When it used to be all one budget component, we had much better ability to use the match.
Thank you.
But again, we're working our way through it. This is new to us, and we're trying to figure out mechanisms to make this work.
Representative Colon.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. So I have a question about the Fish and Game Fund. I'm sorry, because I'm new at this too. Yeah. Where does the money for the Fish and Game Fund come from, and what is the balance of the fund around?
Okay, so when Dingell Johnson and PR, which is the federal funding sources, were designated by Congress, they required states to basically come up with a match that was guaranteed. So unlike most funds in the state of Alaska, this one is constitutionally protected by the voters of Alaska. So, and the fees come from the sale of sport fishing licenses or hunting licenses and some forfeitures of fines associated with fishing. The current balance in those are, I don't know. I think it's, we maintain a balance of about $4 or $5 million in each one of them as a buffer, but I think the annual balance is about $50 million in each one of those on an annual basis. But I'll get you a numbers. We just did that analysis.
Can I have a follow-up?
Follow-up, please.
And again, just real quick. Yeah. They're used by the department principally to match the Dingell Johnson and PR funds that come in from the federal government. That's a principal use.
That was part of my follow-up. So I just didn't know if there was authority to use the money outside of matching federal funds. Do you have authority to use
it for other things? It's very stipulated on what you can use it for.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Wildlife conservation, we have several levels in here. We have we're basically asking for additional money on Fish and Game Fund authority to match available Pittman-Robertson funding. Pittman-Robertson PR funding is going up. Sale of guns and licenses across the nation are increasing. Our number of money coming in. We got in trouble a couple of years ago in reverting funds because we didn't have enough Fish and Game Fund to match it. We've worked to restore the health of the Fish and Game Fund on the wildlife side. We're to that point now where we can actually ask for some additional authority so that we're preventing the reversion of funds. The second one is kind of, I think, probably misnamed. This is $1.3 million of general fund used that we'd like to use to match to study species that are not hunted or fished, hunted in this case. So when one thing we can't do with Pittman-Robertson funds is to study animals that aren't hunted or fished. And we have a trouble with using $100 to do that too, because it's got to be a hunted or fished species. But we have other sources of federal funding like state wildlife action grants that can be used to fund things that aren't hunted or fished. An example is bumblebees. There's a state interest. We manage bumblebees, amazingly. I found that out when I became commissioner. But when the Fish and Wildlife Service had a petition to list bumblebees, we actually initiated a study to find out whether that species of bumblebee was present in Alaska. We found out through our studies that, in fact, they weren't. So we were able to prevent that listing of bumblebees. So this gives us a match for those federal dollars that we can use to study those non-hunted species. And it really is in the state interest to do that. And then the last one is capital improvement project to accommodate additional projects and CIP requests. Help me through this one here. This is another one where there's some PR projects that we have to do that basically aren't eligible for match with the Fish and Game Fund. And it's just the $90,000 we need to match that so that we can get access to the federal funds. And then, go ahead. Yeah. Oh, next slide.
Okay, we have a question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Commissioner, through the chair. Commissioner, when we started in the last few years to hear a lot more about invasive species, which clearly we aren't hunting and fishing yet because they're invasive, so we haven't set up any harvest guidelines. Is that the kind of stuff that can be done out of this support and outreach of non-Pittman-Roberts projects? Is that where invasive species monitoring, research, et cetera, comes from?
Yeah, we could do it underneath this, or we could do it under, I think right now our invasive species program is housed in our division of sport fish, because most of the invasive species are fisheries related right now, but there's no reason we couldn't use this funding source for that too.
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you. Representative Klum.
Thank you, Chair, through the chair. So you didn't, or maybe I missed the shooting range, the public shooting range ask. So I'm trying to understand the PR funding. My husband's a longtime youth shotgun shooting coach at Rabbit Creek. So is that that ask, is that 63 trying to match the higher amount of federal dollars, or is that 63 to go to ranges? How does that affect the funding of the ranges, I guess, is what I'm asking.
So the requirement under federal law for us to use PR money for shooting ranges has gone up. This gives us the authority to put this into shooting ranges due to the federal requirement that we spend more on it.
Oh.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
In the commissioner's office, we're replacing federal receipts with interagency receipts. We figure we have a balance of interagency receipts, so this makes sense to fund that off of interagency rather than federal receipts. I'm going to let my administrative services director talk about the administrative services, but I'll talk about the Board of Fisheries and Game first. So we're asking for $75,000 to UGF to host a joint meeting of the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game. There's a requirement in the statute that they meet on some unspecified basis to take up things that either board can't take up alone. A couple of examples are the advisory committee structure, because advisory committees advise both boards. Another one is how you deal with subsistence use areas and subsistence regulations, since they're identical in both boards. So we're proposing to hold that meeting next year, and we estimate it's going to cost about $75,000 to host that meeting.
All right. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Commissioner Lang. Can you explain to me the mechanism here, the replacement of federal receipts with interagency receipts? So what agency are those receipts coming from? And is that a long-term funding solution? So those are my questions.
So we got the authority to increase the rate on which we tax federal receipts coming into the department. So now we have a greater balance in interagency receipts on resulting from our tax or fee associated with taxing the federal grants. So we propose to not take federal receipts any longer to pay for the commissioner's office, use those interagency receipts.
Okay.
We make it sustainable over time.
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Question?
Representative Josephson.
The chair, the statutory designated program receipt authority tells me that you're increasing someone's fees to the tune of $900,000. What is that about?
For the record, Melissa Hill, Acting Administrative Services Director. Let me get it there. For the $900,000, so we receive our money from the feds as grants and things like that. There is a fee charge, like the commissioner was saying. We call it indirect. Other people call it overhead. That fee goes towards overhead. We have been collecting enough of that over the last few years that we are able to carry that forward in case a year comes in where that fee collected is a little less. What we're asking with the $900,000 is in FY24 to be able to spend a large chunk of it.
allowing our divisions to focus that money that would go to OIT costs, administrative costs, HR costs, to go to their program costs, and we'll pay for that for them out of this $900,000 for that 1 year.
Okay, thank you.
And the other two items in administrative services, one is a fund source change, changing the flavor of money coming in. We used to get general fund program receipts and CIP receipts. We don't receive those anymore, but what we do have an abundance of is statutory designated receipts, which we would like to use instead. And then Department Facilities Maintenance Unit true-up. We have over 330 facilities around the state and a small team of staff that go around and make sure that we keep our deferred maintenance ask down by maintaining those promptly. This money is to help get them closer to having it be an ongoing thing rather than a deferred maintenance cost.
And then the last two is we're asking for $50,000 UGF to get our Habitat staff out actually visiting the sites that they're permitting rather than trying to do all their permitting from the office, actually tour and work with the proposals of the sites so we get a better idea of what's happening and then having an ability to monitor what our permits are. And then state subsistence research, we got $150,000 of interagency receipts to conduct a subsistence use survey update in Prince William Sound, and we're asking for receipt authority to conduct that survey.
Chair Johnson.
Oh. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Commissioner, the Habitat travel, I know that in my first year, 2019, all departments were asked to cut travel substantially, and I think it was 25%, maybe it was 50% of travel. And so I am curious for the Habitat permit, and we knew that, you know, this was really, it wasn't people going on junkets, it was people doing their basic jobs like reviewing Habitat permit sites. How close to recovering what they used to need to do that to keep up with this is this 50,000?
This gets them back to where they need to be.
Okay. Follow up?
Oh,
do you know it was cut in 2019? Was it a $100,000 cut and 50 is going to get us close enough, or?
I'll get you that number. I don't remember what was cut, but I asked that section as to what they needed to get out and do their work, and this was the amount they identified.
Okay. Thank you.
And then finally, I just wanted to leave you with some of the issues and concerns that face me as a commissioner. Federal intrusion in state management authorities is a growing issue. We have facing a lawsuit on the Kenai Peninsula that basically gives the federal government a property right over fish and game on federal lands that has far-ranging implications as to our ability to manage fish and wildlife on federal land, but also potentially off federal land, given there's a property interest. We're in the Supreme Court on that one right now, but also last year we have a restraining order against me from managing the lower Kuskokwim River within the boundaries of the National Wildlife Refuge down there. That affected our ability to provide for subsistence uses above the refuge, as well as impacting our ability to provide for king salmon escapements above the refuge. So it's a growing issue and something we're going to continue to ensure that we get those guaranteed rights we had at statehood to manage. Reduced marine survivals of coho and crab resulting in restricted or closed fisheries. I think we're seeing that across the state with king salmon right now. Crab crashed largely because of a poor marine survival condition in the Bering Sea. We were instituting marine science programs. This is not about the capital budget, but you'll see an expansion of a marine science program in the capital budget coming in. We're dealing with it. Intercept and bycatch are issues that have been identified. We just completed the bycatch task force. We're looking at ways to integrate those recommendations into future and out-year budgets. And intercept is a huge issue. Just take a look at what happened at the REM meeting this recently. Poor winter survival affecting big game populations is a big issue. Climate change is not only affecting populations of animals, it's affecting how we count them. You know, later snowfalls, we rely on snow to track animals to find out where they are so we can count and get bull cow ratios. As snow leaves the ground later in the season, our ability to get the animals counted before they drop their antlers is a big issue. So it's changing not only how we manage those animals, but their survival rates. Food security is a huge issue across the state. I think one thing the Food Security Task Force identified as an issue is that, or identified is the importance of wild foods to Alaskans' food security. I think everybody underestimated the value of wild foods, food security, not only in rural areas of Alaska, but also in urban areas. Almost everybody's got a freezer full of salmon someplace, even if they live in an urban area. Impacts of Endangered Species Act and Marine Mammal Protection Act decisions, that's having a huge impact on the North Slope. You can just look at what's happening with the Willow Project. You know, we want to make sure that the decisions that are being made, we're not disagreeing that we need to conserve those animals. We just want to make sure that the decisions that are being made are based on the best available science and not just on precautionary principles. Non-fish mariculture is a growing issue. I think Representative Galvin said that earlier. I think we're interested in growing that industry. We see it as an economic opportunity moving forward. We've dedicated a lot of money through the EVOS program into that activity, hopefully to answer some of the research questions associated with growing that industry. Invasive species is an issue. We saw that we got green crab now down in Metlakatla. We're working to figure out how best to deal with invasive species because it's a tricky issue. It has many jurisdictions associated with it. And then it also has a lot of questions with how you deal with preventing versus how you're managing when they're there. Then finally, recruitment and retention issues from my seat are growing. It's not getting any easier to retain and recruit a workforce, but we're tackling those with the abilities we have. So,
is that the end? Are you at the end of your presentation?
That's all.
That is it. All right, very good. We got to the question slide, so I think we have questions.
Yeah. You're supposed to hold your question until the end.
For the first time, I'm realizing that guarantees me the right to a question.
Through the chair, Commissioner, on the federal intrusion issue, you said that the Kenai case is before the Superior Court, but they haven't granted certiorari, correct? So it's not clear. The Supreme Court may say, we don't want this case. Is that possible?
That's entirely possible. It's sitting in front of them right now, and I understand within the next 2 weeks we should have a decision.
And a follow-up?
Follow-up.
And am I right, and one thing I heard from some hunting guides yesterday, and I have a lot of reading to do on this that concerns me, is I guess the Ninth Circuit went beyond saying, well, or at least the federal rulemaking went beyond saying we don't like methods and means on federal preserves or, I guess, refuges, but in the case of the Kenai. But we also think that regular hunting, guided hunting, is a form of predator control. And I'd never really thought of it in that way. In other words, the guides are concerned that the definition of the preclusion on some methods and means is so expansive that it goes beyond denning of pups and some of these admittedly controversial issues to just straight standard hunting. Am I right?
That's correct. So the Kenai rule is a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service rule that basically gives a plenary right over the management. The National Park Service rules are rules that basically are saying that any kind of hunting that affects a predator is sport hunting. It is incompatible with the value system of the National Preserve System. We argue that discussion was held during ANILCA and that we could hunt bears on land. So what's really interesting about that is they're saying it's incompatible with the natural diversity mandates of the preserve, but yet they're going to allow those very activities that they're banning under state regulations because they call them sport hunting. They're going to approve under federal hunting regulations. So they're not going to disallow the taking of bears out of dens or disallow the hunting of predators, but they're just going to disallow them for under state hunting regulation, but allow them under federal hunting regulations.
Follow up.
So I didn't get that part in my meeting with them. So the result will be the same. They'll enjoy their concessions, they'll guide, they'll have their clients, but they'll do it under a federal regime They'll charge the same amount. They'll take the same beers.
No, that's not true. They'll what they're saying is that if you're a federally qualified user, you'll be able to do that. But a hunting guide that goes onto a preserve won't be able to take a non-resident or a non-federally qualified hunter hunting.
Okay, follow up.
Follow up.
So I assume guides mostly take non-residents.
Yes.
So even though they'll apply a federal regime rather than a state regime of lawmaking or rules, there is serious substantive difference, I think, is what you just said.
What I'm saying is that under the federal rules, only federally qualified users would be able to participate in that activity. So a guide who takes would not be able to take a non-federally qualified hunter up and participate in taking a bear.
And I need to know that definition.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't want to get too far off the budget.
Yeah, I know. I'll be glad to stop by.
All right. I only have one question. Is a bumblebee an actual species of... Is it an actual species, or it just happens to be the bumbles?
There's different species of bumblebees. There's western bumblebees. There's Starkley's bumblebees, I think they're called. And when we found out when we did the genetic work on them that the bumblebee that they wanted to list wasn't the bumblebee that we have in Alaska. So,
what's the Alaska bumblebee called?
I think we have western bumblebees and the ones they were trying to list for Stuckley's bumblebees.
All right. Well, Representative Cronk, last question.
Chair, just a quick question. So, when's the hunting season for bumblebees?
Well, that's the point. We can't use any federal. We can't use hunting license fees, Fish and Game Fund, and we can't use federal DPR funds to study bumblebees. So we could have ended up with a listing. We didn't have this pot of money available to us to study them and answer that question.
Madam Chair, I'm told that you have to be an exceptional shot to hunt bumblebees, but I don't know if that's true or not.
We'll find out at the shoot.
Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair, I think Melissa Hill might be skilled and able to get him with a bullwhip.
So, with no further actual business before the House Finance Subcommittee, or House Finance Committee, we have our next meeting scheduled for Monday, March 6, 2023, at 1:30 p.m., when we will hear Senate Bill 86, Reject Compensation Commission Recommendations, and with no further actual business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.